Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. I know I didn't get a lot of time into the ratification debates yesterday, but I hope to get into that today because I really didn't get a chance to finish what I was talking about regarding economic liberty. But in my typical beginning, I have to tell you that this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. You are listening to the only show that asserts a constitutional solution to getting the general government, the federal government, back into the framework of the Constitution. Most people kind of realize that things aren't right in Kansas, and as a matter of fact, most people recognize that many of the things that the federal government is doing is well outside the scope. How did the framers give us a government like this? They did it, my friends, and they did not intend on it going down this path. They actually gave us a system that, in my view, was perfect for their time and is a perfect foundation even for our time today. There are some minor things that we probably need to fix, but we got to get the federal government back into compliance to the Constitution because that is our number one problem. And so, as you know, the show is dedicated to those state legislators who have the authority, because it's every state legislator in each state who has the authority of oversight over the Constitution. So we are dedicated in helping and supporting them in getting in office and basically leading the charge and taking back the Constitution. We're also in support of those grassroots leaders who should be controlling their brand and making sure that those people who are being elected are doing exactly what they need to be done. That is the self-government model that we're supposed to have. What this means in my supporting and this show supporting these groups and individuals is it means that we're supporting those who are willing to support all of us and protect all of us from federal tyranny. And so I hope that you appreciate that, and I hope that you endeavor to help get engaged, whether that be at a local level or whether that be in grassroots, getting in office, whatever that means. Everybody has to start doing their part, because if not, it's not a self-government. And we're getting a government that the richest people can buy, and that's what we get. If you want to call, the number to call in is 215-867-8255. The phone lines are open. And if you do call, again, I have these three C's that I like reminding people. If you know me by name, I go by GR for the show and for public purposes. So please be confidential and refer to me as GR. I also ask that you be civil. And I also ask that you be concise, because an hour flies by really quick. I will also point out that I do have a video that explains just how bad it is. It's just the first 30 minutes of this video out on YouTube, I believe, will help you understand what we're dealing with and what we need to do in getting the federal government back into compliance. So if you go to reclaimingtherepublic.org, which is where all my podcasts are, then just click on the Take Action page. Just go down underneath the two PDF slides, slide one for the solution, slide two, the strategy. And right under there is a link to the YouTube video that I shot last year. And I basically provide you by the numbers and go through the slides that are just above there, because those are the slides I used for that. So anyway, I just ask that you kind of share that, charge admission, make money off of that presentation. And if you make some, if you want to share it, that's fine. If not, then at least you're a richer man or woman or person or what have you. I have to do my, I guess, the the opportunity of groveling for those who, if you have time, if you don't have anything else to do with your life, and most people are very overtaxed. As a matter of fact, I always tell people that I think we're all dying from a social disease called the busies, because it seems like everybody's just too busy to get anything done anymore, even taking care of our own health and what have you, because we're just too busy and not being, you know, taking care of our health by not behaving properly. I'm just saying, you know, doing your regular checkups, that type of stuff. But anyway, if you're not too busy and you do have some time, I would love some help. I'm pleading, groveling. Like I said, I'm groveling for help. If you got a phone, a computer, or what have you, you'd be surprised how you can help. And so, by all means, just send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And with that, and with Trump in Singapore, or I should say with the Trump summit and Kim summit going on still, unless they just broke, but I have not seen it in the news. And there's a lot of analysis, and it seems like every, you know, liberal rag out there is saying that Trump lost and Kim won. But bottom line, as I looked out my window, looked through this news, I did not find any sign that the federal government is disbanding any of its unconstitutional roles, responsibilities, or powers. So what does that mean? That means that you and I and the good patriots of this nation will have to do this. And it doesn't mean that we need to use our Second Amendment rights to do this. What it means is we have to use the Constitution as our weapon, as I always say. And if we're not using our Constitution as both our weapon and as our shield, we are going to lose every battle we engage in politically. So that's why it's really important that we understand the Constitution and understand those limitations. It's just a contract, folks. There's nothing spectacular about it. Lawyers like to aggrandize this concept of constitutional law. There's no such thing. There's the Constitution, and that's it. There's a pile of cases where outcomes have changed, but there's nowhere in the Constitution where it says we're going to allow you to have precedence and use precedence to move public, you know, towards public opinion, census, or no. It is either in the Constitution or isn't in the Constitution. And the charge for SCOTUS, or I should say, the Supreme Court, is to utilize the Constitution in and or ratified treaties for any of their cases and rulings. I don't think anywhere there it says, oh, well, by all means, you can continually move things with precedence and sliding and interpretation and shoot, use international law. No, it's very clear. Article 3, Section 2 clearly states, and that's why we go through the ratification debates, that they have jurisdiction strictly over those things within the Constitution, and the only things that they can use for citing, or I should say making decisions on cases, is the Constitution and ratified treaties. That is it. And so, one more time, we've got the Red Pill Expo, and that's coming up on the 21st. That is next week. We're just literally just over a week away. And so if you haven't signed up for the streaming side, I would say, you know, at a minimum, you'd probably want to do that, because there's going to be some really good speakers. There's going to be some really good insights that are going to be coming from this event. And I would highly recommend everybody and all looking into this. As a matter of fact, yours truly will probably, well, I'm going to be highlighting my content in Red Pill University, so that people can start, if you sign up for Red Pill University, you can actually start getting educated on the processes of reclaiming the Republic and so forth. So it is a platform that will help people start getting exposed and so forth. Anywho, I will also say, because this is the latest in the news that I did see today, and this is big. This is really big, because this typifies, or this is a very atypical thing when the economy is going good. When the economy is going good, we have charitable contributions go up. And they're saying that charity and the charitable contributions that are being put out by you, the American citizen, is almost a half a trillion dollars. And so I believe that was based on last year. So based on, because taxes finally came in and so forth. So obviously the economy is turning around and people are starting to recognize, well, I've got money, I should be contributing. If we shut down, and this goes in line with what I've talked about as far as the federal government creating a national church, and what they're doing is they're using taxation to take care of welfare. Welfare should be administered at the local level by churches, communities, what have you. And for the federal government to step in and take your money and give it to people without any consequence, without any regard, just, hey, you're entitled, here's your money, then that moves it away from charity and away from helping somebody to an entitlement. So if you want to understand why we have problems, again, government is operating well outside the boundaries of the Constitution because they don't have the constitutional power to do those things, but they're doing them anyway. And so I will just tell you that maybe this is a good sign that we have this, but I'll also tell you that if we got government out of the mix of charity, whether that be food stamps and all of those types of things, and people honestly contributed an honest and fair, what they call tithe offerings, whatever you want to call it, if people paid 10% to the churches so that the churches could take care of those who are in need, then I truly believe that you will see a huge shift in this country, because people will no longer have this sense of entitlement because they'll have an accountability to those who are contributing to them and the churches. And so that's how you get people to change behavior, change their paradigms, and that's all a base part of enlightenment, which is something I talk about a lot. But I'm up at a hard break. And I will be right back after a word from our sponsors. Thank you so much. Most people resist change, but how would you like to be rewarded in at least two ways for considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy believes your smile is a reflection upon him, and that is a mutually shared reward between both him and you. Another reward is improving your overall health by working with your dentist like Dr. Tracy and developing a strategy in maintaining your dental health. But how would you like a direct incentive in considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy and his staff from time to time offer a special referral program. For every new patient you refer who becomes a patient, Dr. Tracy will reward you with $50 off your dental work. Consequently, if you refer five people, that's $250 off your dental work. Give them a call and ask for the details and the availability of the referral program by calling 466-6614 or go to VonTracyDDS.com. Again, that's 466-6614 or sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. So as I was saying, or as I was, I guess, preaching, and I apologize for that, I will tell you that when it comes down to charitable contributions, as a matter of fact, if you read Malachi, because again, I'm preaching, right, and I apologize, but if you go and read Malachi, I think this is where the Lord kind of chastises Israel, because he tells them that they're robbing God, because they are not bearing their offerings and fasts and tithes and so forth. And he says, prove me now this day, pay an honest fast or tithe or an offering. I'm paraphrasing here, but he says, you pay an honest tithe and show or prove to me that the windows of heaven won't be open so that you won't have room enough to receive these blessings. And so if we want to turn this country around, a big part of doing that is getting people off of the entitlement mentality and into charity and into becoming self-sufficient and self-sustainable and so forth, so that people don't have to have their handouts. Anybody that wants to be able to work should be able to work. And we know right now, with the way the economy is, there's more jobs, apparently, there's more jobs than people looking for work, which means that either somebody's lying or this becomes a huge opportunity for a lot of foreign exchange employment to come in for people. And I forget what they call those cards, those visas, where somebody can come in and become at some level of professional service engineer or what have you. And companies love that because they can bring people in for cheaper labor. But anyway, also in the news, we have five main primaries today. One is in Maine, of course, that's why it's a Maine primary, and Nevada, North Dakota, South Carolina, and Virginia. And this is a primary day where no states that begin with the letter A through L are having a primary. Just happened to notice that. But anyway, according to all the liberal rags out there, I think I've already mentioned this, but apparently if you go through all the different news sites and if you use Google or Bing or anything like that, and you want to look up the news on this Singapore summit, you will find that Trump, U.S., we're the losers, and that Kim wins. And in looking at the document supposedly that was signed yesterday or last night, it doesn't seem to me like it is anything negative towards us or them. And it looks like it's a great opportunity for Korea to finally shed itself from its meddling little uncle in China and its step uncle, Russia, in trying to free itself so that it can actually open itself up into becoming a free nation and a free market. I will tell you that probably one of the most inspirational or motivational things that Trump could say is, if we took military action, we would open up a passageway in the middle of North Korea so that all of your citizens can flee to go to South Korea for and then you'll have nobody to fire your guns. Because once people get into this hallway or this corridor, then they know they're home free. And that right there, because any despot knows that they're holding back. That's why there's been all sorts of people trying to get across the border lately, because it's just that dismal and it's that bad. And so when you let things get that bad, you're not going to have a lot of people motivated in trying to do anything other than doing what's best for them when they have the opportunity. Because nobody's going to kill themselves trying to run across that line unless you really feel that you do not have any other alternative because you are dying already from the parasites that are eating in your stomach and so forth. So anyway, there's just no doubt in my mind that there are more motivating factors for North Korea to give up its position and move away from the meddling and nefarious activities of the communists and say, you know what, I think this freedom thing has a real good gig and opportunity here. And he could go down in the annals of history as one of the greatest leaders of not just North Korea, but that part of Asia. And so anyway, I ran out of time, like I was saying yesterday, and talking about economic liberty. So I wanted to place a little more emphasis on this because I think it's really important because people don't understand liberty. At least not enough people understand liberty. Most people think liberty is freedom. It's the freedom of being able to do whatever you want. It's being able to, you know, for little kids, liberty is being able to go to bed when you want to and eat what you want and, you know, behave any way you want to behave. No, that's not liberty. Liberty comes, and I was saying this, and I think this is where we ended yesterday. I was saying that liberty goes hand in hand with three principles, and these principles have to have a symbiotic relationship. In other words, it has to be a mutually benefiting relationship where one person or a organization, a company, or what have you, has the free agency. And that's the very specific part. You have free agency to create or make any product or do anything that you want to do. In tandem with that are these two other factors or principles that you have to adhere to. You have to be responsible for what you do, and you have to be accountable to those who, your employees, to your to the geographical region. So like if you're thinking you can get away with poisoning the water and killing the people around you, nope, you're going to have to be accountable for that. And so freedom and free enterprise in this corporate world of a true free market does not equate to, you know, just polluting and this mayhem that corporations can get away with whatever they want to. No, no, no. In economic liberty, a corporation has to be responsible for what it does, and it has to be accountable for it to truly be a liberal or a form of liberty. And so what would the world be like if our corporate entities and businesses, ma and pa stores and so forth, were those that, one, were free to do whatever they wanted to do, but if they made bad mistakes, then they would be held responsible and accountable. They'd, you know, hey, they'd do their time. I believe that that would literally be a paradigm shift. And as a matter of fact, I believe that would probably be a shutdown, possibly, of things like the New York Stock Exchange. Because all of a sudden, corporations could not be beholding to stockholders in having to raise their stock value. Their duty and diligence is to, one, the quality of their product, to their customers, and so forth, not just their investors. I don't necessarily think that you would get rid of, you'd have to get rid of an exchange or investment opportunities, because there are companies that are just, you know, awesome companies that have done great work over the centuries or more, it's a couple centuries, because a good example of that's Procter & Gamble. I know that there's some evil talk and things about Procter & Gamble, but did you know that Procter & Gamble in the mid-1800s was the very first company to ever do profit shares with their employees? The reason they did that is because they recognized the threat of union labor coming through, and they said, you know what, we're going to do everything we can to help accommodate and appease One of the things they found was it didn't help. The people didn't appreciate being able to get their shares, or I should say getting a share of profit. And that was just literally due to more of the illiteracy and ignorance and so forth of the employee. And so that's why employers have a responsibility in their community to ensure that those kids going to school are receiving the education. So here's these relationships when it comes to economic liberty, that a corporation, you got to understand, corporations are the entities that receive the byproduct of our education system. So why is it that we're so concerned with social engineering instead of making sure that these kids can actually do engineering, doing the math, doing the sciences, understanding history? You know, I don't know if I care too much about philosophy, but these kids are going to have to go into the corporate world, and the real stakeholders, or I should say the people that are going to be the biggest recipients of education, are employers. They should be driving what kids should be learning and why they should be learning it, so that we can continually maintain a cutting edge in sciences and so forth. But I'm out of time, and it is time to go to another hard break. So please stay tuned, and I will wrap this up, and we will get into the power of attorney in North Carolina. I think you'll find it interesting. Most of my listeners understand the importance in having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategy for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of your teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money just to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy for your teeth and dental health, then you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain and restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Von Tracy, DDS.com. That's VonTracyDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, Don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
How many of you have ever heard of a mercantile economic system? That was the type of economic system that was established and ran by many of the nations of Europe, and Britain had a mercantile system. And as a matter of fact, each colony was dictated as to what they were supposed to grow. And that's why, because tobacco was a huge cash crop, many of the colonies that could grow tobacco, that's what they were told to grow. And so in some cases, some of the farmers, the plantations that were growing tobacco would actually grow other things so that they wouldn't know, so that they would be able to actually make more money on the side. And one of the things that they learned pretty quickly about tobacco was the fact that it depleted the soil, so it made it really hard for other things to grow. So they had to start rotating and so forth, because after a while, when you have grown tobacco for a year or two or three, your output starts really diminishing because your soil gets so depleted. Well, anyway, a mercantile system is where the government is literally running the economy and basically saying that these are the products you're going to produce, these are the products you're going to produce, where they're very active. There's not much difference between a mercantile system and a communist system, if you really think about it. It is government ran. If you look at our economy today, our economy is pretty much government ran. I mean, at the single small business and so forth, there are some latitudes and freedom, but there are lots of barriers for entry into very specific types of products and markets and so forth. And so we don't have a free market. We kind of have a mercantile system. In an enlightened society, though, you would not have things or markets for things like pornography. That just would not exist in a free or a true liberal state that is based on enlightenment. Or you wouldn't have other types of products or markets such as prostitution, drugs, gambling, and other destructive products and or markets. They just wouldn't exist in an enlightened society. Now, as you know, the framers, they did have some gambling. They did have some of these types of products. But you got to understand, the paradigm was a lot different. Whiskey, back in those days, was a mainstay. As a matter of fact, medicine, if you were ill, back in those days, good bloodletting was usually the cure. So what they understood scientifically and what they understood was not literally based on enlightenment and or really good education. And so we've moved a long way since then to with empirical data to understand certain things are really bad, and you know, bad for not just the person, but bad for society. And so I don't believe that these types of things like prostitution, drugs, gambling, pornography, those types of things would be no longer in existence because of laws, but they would become obsolete due to a good quality truth in society and in our education system, that we would be able to teach openly the dangers of these things and the destruction that will come from these things. And, you know, there's nothing probably more powerful. I mean, if you've gone through school and you saw a black lung, or you saw, you know, lung cancer, you know, a part of a lung that was taken out from smoking, you know, those types of things, you kind of learn, you know, it has a good effect. But it also has, it has a limited effect. And in understanding the data and in looking at the data, you really are chancing odds. Most people, when they make calculations on their behavior, they don't really look at the data, because 9 times out of 10, they don't have the data. They just kind of leap forward. And that's really because the education system is more concerned about engineering your children into transgenders and what have you. I mean, I don't understand what the heck's going on with their education system, but their focus is way backwards, and it is debasement, not enlightenment. But you see, with an economic liberty type of basis for an economy, then if one made a choice to, you know, go off and do something, and there were consequences that came with that, such as an STD, cancer, or something else that it was a byproduct, because 9 times out of 10, you don't get away with just, you know, playing with fire. You usually get burnt. And so those who would engage in those types of practices in a true economic liberal state, you would have to pay for the economic impact that you've just occurred. Whether it, you know, you get lung cancer, or you get, you know, from chewing tobacco. I remember when I was in the Marine Corps, a young man decided to chew tobacco when he went to Okinawa, just to, you know, just something to, you know, pass the time. That poor kid got cancer of the mouth, and he ended up, I think, you know, they shipped him out. I don't know if he ended up dying, but I know he had a lot of his mouth removed because of the cancer. And I'm going, well, there you go. There's not a high probability that that happens to the person when they first start chewing, but there is a probability, and there's a very low probability that that can happen to you. And he was just the lucky kid, I guess. But anyway, when people have to pay for their economic impacts, they start thinking differently, because they say, you know, I can't afford that kind of decision. I can't afford that choice. Just look at it this way. One of the things that kind of, you know, really infuriated me when I was driving across the pass in the wintertime, and we had to stop because people were driving on the road with improper safety features. And this is a public road where they're dictating you must have these snow tires, traction tires, blah, blah, blah. And people were driving with regular street tires in cars going over the pass. I truly believe that if you have an accident and you were ill prepared driving with the improper materials and equipment on your car, you should have to pay the economic impact for the stopping of traffic, for the flow of commerce, and everything else. I mean, that would bury somebody, but it would drive home the consequences of your stupidity and their lack of thought, and impacting all of these people that were, you know, just trying to go about their daily life when all of a sudden your behavior stopped them. And so it's really important that we start looking at, you know, what economic liberty is, because now you have an accountability and a responsibility for your behaviors, whether you're your own productive person, self-employed, or whether you're an employee or what have you. We all have a part to play in maintaining productivity for everybody, and in ensuring that we engage in good productive behavior, as well as not, you know, doing harmful things such as destroying the community, destroying, you know, the water, what have you. And this isn't about climate change. This isn't about the liberal green and all of that. This is about enlightenment in society and having true economic liberty. I don't want to overemphasize this. As a matter of fact, I think that what we deal with is that our education system and our society trivializes, and it basically it negates what the economic impacts are. And that is, I think, a real disservice. And what I believe it does is it enables bad behavior, and it is a straight path in plummeting our society towards debasement. Now, let me move into these long-awaited ratification debates. And I talked about this before the last break, and I see I'm coming up on another one. Do you understand the history on the power of attorney? I mean, you've probably heard of the power of attorney, and you probably may have used one, or at least you know of people that have had to use a power of attorney. But what is a power of attorney? There's a general power of attorney where you literally give somebody the full power to do anything and everything as if that was you. And not a lot of people like doing that. And I don't think a wise person would ever do that, especially if you're capable of doing it. That's why most people go with a very limited power of attorney. But what does that have to do with the ratification debates? And so let me pull up the latest one that I want to go through. And this is Mr. Iredell in North Carolina. And he says, actually, I've got 11 seconds, so I won't even get into it. But he talks about a power of attorney, and we're going to get into that when we come back from the break, because this is a great metaphor in understanding what the Constitution is and what the Constitution is not. And so in context as a power of attorney. So we will be right back after a word from our sponsors, and I will get into Mr. Iredell's comments from the North Carolina ratification debates. Thank you so much. It's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit, and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way myself with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I've learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Von Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money away on just a good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I would ask you to give Dr. Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 509-466-6614. Again, sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
And so I'm not saving necessarily the best for last, but this is some pretty good stuff. And this is what Mr. Iredell says. Did any man ever hear before that at the end of a power of attorney, it was said that the attorney should not exercise more power than was given him? Suppose, for instance, a man had lands in the counties of Anniston and Coswell, and he should give another a power of attorney to sell his lands in Anson. Would the other have the authority to sell the lands in Coswell? Or could he, without absurdity, say, 'Tis true you have not expressly authorized me to sell the lands in Coswell, but as you had lands there and did not say I should not, I thought I might as well sell those lands as the other.' A bill of rights as conceived would not only be incongruous, but dangerous. no man let his ingenuity be what it will, could enumerate all the individual rights not relinquished by this Constitution. Suppose, therefore, an enumeration of a great many, but an omission of some, and that long after all traces of our present disputes were at an end, any of the omitted rights should be invaded, and in the invasion be complained of, what would be the plausible answer of the governments to such a complaint? Would they not naturally say, we live at a great distance from the time when this Constitution was established. We can judge of it much better by the ideas of it entertained at the time than by any ideas of our own. If some of these words I'm reading here are not ringing out, I mean, because this is exactly what we've been hearing since the Constitutional founding. Anyway, he goes on and says, we can judge of it much better by the ideas of it entertained at the time than by any ideas of our own. The Bill of Rights passed at the time showed that the people did not think every power retained was not given, else this Bill of Rights was not only useless but absurd. But we are not at liberty to charge an absurdity upon our ancestors, who have given such strong proofs of their good sense, as well as their attachment to liberty. So long as the rights enumerated in the Bill of Rights remain unviolated, you have no reason to complain. This is not one of them. Thus, a Bill of Rights might operate as a snare rather than a protection. If we had formed a general legislator with undefined powers, a Bill of Rights would not only have been proper but necessary, and it would have been operated as an exception to the legislative authority in such particulars. It has the effect in respect to some of the American constitutions where the powers of legislation are general, but where there are powers of a particular nature and expressly defined, as in the case of this Constitution before us. I think the reason I have given a Bill of Rights is not only unnecessary, but would be absurd and dangerous. And that's the interesting part, because he points to a power of attorney. He says that even though you get very specific in the power of attorney, because there was this assumption in these Bill of Rights that there would be, you know, just a definitive list of the things that they can't do. And so, well, hey, you didn't list those, so I'm going to presume that I can do these things because you're allowing me to do this here, but not there, as in selling land in Anniston and Coswell. And so I think it's very, very clear. And as a matter of fact, the whole point of a power of attorney, or the whole point of that contract, is to list very specifically what a person can do. And that's it. There's nothing more a person can add to a power of attorney. And that's the same thing with the Constitution. No one can add anything to the Constitution without following the Article 5 process, which is the process of amending the Constitution, delegating a new power, a new role, or a new responsibility, or taking back a power, role, or responsibility from the federal government. You see, the federal government is limited, and it dictates what it can do and what it can't do by that Constitution. Most people, you know, when you ask them about the Constitution, they usually just point to the Bill of Rights, because then they understand what their few rights are. The right to bear arms, the freedom of speech, freedom of religious expression, those types of things. But they don't really understand what the federal government was delegated to. They only understand their rights. So in some case, and in, I guess and this is, I've heard a lot of people argue this, that, you know, thank God we have a Bill of Rights because at least some people understand the Constitution to that degree. I don't know if that's a better solution than actually saying if we didn't have a Bill of Rights, then I believe it would have forced the education to basically say we have an enumerated Constitution that limits the federal government's actions to what is listed within that Constitution, and therefore they can't do anything more than that without following the Article 5 process. There has been, and as he argues here, because you didn't list this as a restraint, and actually because this came out before the Bill of Rights actually came out, because this argument and this discussion was in 1788, before Madison the following summer was actually authoring the Bill of Rights. Because in the Bill of Rights, it states, those things not expressly delegated, and as a matter of fact, I don't even want to assume that. I'm going to actually have to go to the tape, and let's actually pull up the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, and Article, or the 10th Amendment states, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, which is Article 1, Section 10, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. And so, very clearly, they threw this one limitation that says, if we didn't delegate this power to you within the Constitution or within these amendments, then you can't do it, because they are reserved for the states, respectively, or to the people, period. That is why, my friends, it is so important not to read just the Constitution. You have to read these ratification debates to clearly understand how tightly limited the federal government really was. They could not just come along and say, you know, we need this Department of Interior because we realize that the development of the West is almost done, and we're not going to have any territories much longer. So why was it in 1849 they decided, because I think Washington State, Alaska, you know, those were late 1800s, it's a few years down the road, and Congress was more than capable of managing, per Article 4, the territories. Why did they create the Department of Interior? Because they understood that they wanted to be able to create land grabs, and after the Civil War, that's exactly what they started doing, was creating unconstitutional land grabs. And that's why my standing question constantly goes out to everybody, you know, show me where in the Constitution the federal government has the authority to create a reservation for trees, for habitats, for people, for any kind of purpose. Show me. There is nothing in the Constitution where the federal government has the ability to take land from the states for any kind of reservation. Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 17 clearly lists and limits the ability for the federal government to take and possess land. You got to understand, they understood the king in taking land and basically, you know, holding the wealth of England and keeping the people poor by keeping them from being able to own and working the land and controlling the land. And so one of the things that our framers did was they wanted to make sure that people had access to land so that they could develop wealth. That's why we were and should be the wealthiest nation on earth. The problem is that we're allowing foreigners to buy our property. I believe that that is a violation of the Constitution. In its intent, even though there's nothing there, the Constitution does not allow foreign entities to be able to buy and own and possess American property or property of the United States. That being said, as you can tell, I am out of time for this show, and so the terrestrial stations will be going off in 15 seconds. So please wait, and I will tell you what we're doing after we say goodbye. Thank you, friends, for tuning in. And with that, I do have a lot more. I've got some more comments, and actually I've got the comments on jurisdiction from an anti-federalist and from, or actually two anti-federalists and from a federalist. But in North Carolina, they get into the jurisdiction limitations as well. And these are very parallel comparisons to what I, you know, looked at in both the Massachusetts, New York, and Virginia. And I will tell you, I find that the New York, the New York ratification debates, even though there was a lot there, they were pretty underwhelming, just because I think the tone was more theory, and the other ratification debates just had a lot of good meat. Anyway, I'm out of time. I will be back tomorrow. I am G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic with your help. Thank you so much, and thank you for helping the show grow. Bye now.